This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether, you know, you're somebody who your family's just rescued a dog, or whether, you know, you're just a dog lover, or you're, you know, that socially anxious child or adult. I think those are all different ways that I'm like hoping people will connect with the story and find their own kind of courage or inspiration, or just simply smile at this little girl's journey and the way that she was able to evolve in the company of this new friend, Millie.
I'm Bianca Schultz from the Children's Book Review, and this is the Growing Readers Podcast, where we delve into the world of literature and storytelling with some of today's most acclaimed authors. I'm thrilled to welcome the talented author and illustrator, Lauren Castillo, to our show today. Lauren joins us to discuss her latest heartwarming picture book, Just Like Millie, in which she not only crafts beautiful illustrations, but also weaves a touching narrative exploring themes of shyness and the power of companionship, particularly through the eyes of a young girl and her rescue dog. But before we delve into the world of Millie and her young friend, let's get to know Lauren a little better. Lauren Castillo has illustrated many books for children, including Happy Like Soccer and Yard Sale. She is also the author-illustrator of the Caldecott Honor Book, Nana in the City. Lauren lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the charming backdrop for Just Like Millie, offering a personal touch to the narrative. Lauren shares her experience of incorporating her hometown into her work. Companionship, whether with animals or humans, plays a significant role in navigating challenging emotions, and Lauren sheds light on this aspect and shares her thoughts on the significance of connection in her work. We'll also peek into Lauren's creative process, from her preferred artistic mediums to the emotional depth she infuses into her illustrations. Plus, discover the heartfelt dedication to her beloved dogs and how they inspired elements of the story. Whether you're a longtime fan of Lauren Castillo's work or discovering her for the very first time, join us for an insightful conversation celebrating the power of storytelling and the magic of childhood imagination. But first, here's the synopsis for Just Like Millie. In a gentle story from Caldecott honoree Lauren Castillo, a shy young girl finds exploring her new city and making friends overwhelming, until a rescue dog helps her uncover the bravery that was always in her. A young girl and her mother move to an apartment in a new city. Despite her mother's efforts to take her out, the girl would rather play by herself in their cozy home. She feels just fine on her own. Introductions to children her age have her hiding behind her mother's legs, and invitations to group activities have her in tears. That is, until she meets Millie, a rescue dog who is not too big, not too small, and kisses her arm when the girl nervously reaches out. With Millie, saying hello to new people isn't so scary, and maybe making a friend isn't either. Through emotionally honest prose and soft, expressive illustrations, Lauren Castillo explores one girl's shyness and anxiety and how one dog's love helps her open up in a warm picture book that reminds readers of how the right companion can make the world feel like a less frightening place. Welcome to the Growing Readers podcast, Lauren. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
So nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Today, you're going to talk about your latest book, which is Just Like Millie. But before we get into the book, I would love to learn more about you. So the human behind the books. So here's a random, totally random conversation starter question. So if you could instantly become an expert in any skill or field, what would it be? And why?
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's hard. Actually, I know. I would love to do like home renovation. I am not so secretly obsessed with HGTV and home decor and demo, like home demo and, you know, remodeling, redecorating. And so I would love that. I would love to, especially like more specifically woodworking, like doing built-ins, like bookshelves, for example, like learning those skills to add to rooms and spaces. That would be amazing. So yeah, I'm going to go with that answer.
I love that answer, especially because my husband and I, we feel the same way and we do try to do some stuff ourselves. But there are definitely jobs like tiling where we're like, okay, we're going to get the expert in today.
Yes. Yeah, I 100% agree.
Well, what's one thing that you do daily that you think would be the most surprising or the most relatable?
Ooh. One thing I'm doing a lot of right now is walking my dog multiple times a day. He's always itching to go out and I've needed a lot of breaks, like just from work and whatnot. And with the weather getting nicer, I'm like constantly out walking my dog. I don't know if that's what you were looking for in an answer, but like, that's something that is like, I feel like every other minute I'm like, do I have to walk the dog yet? Is it time to go out? On a walk. This is a new foster fail in our house. So he's quite needy and we're getting to know each other still. And, you know, he really loves his walks. So that's a little background there.
How old is he?
He's 3 and he was picked up on the streets of South Carolina and we don't know much else. So they estimate him to be about 3. So yeah, he's a Chihuahua and pug mix.
Oh my gosh. So cute.
Yes, he's quite cute.
All right. Well, now let's get a little more focused here on like creating books. What is it that drives you and keeps you driven to create books specifically for children?
Ooh, okay. Well, I think about myself as a young reader and specifically that age where I was like starting to read picture books and then getting into the like early grades in school and, you know, the requirements being more on the focus of chapter books and middle grade type novels. And so I've been thinking about that a lot these days. I worked more recently in my career. I've worked on an early chapter book series called Our Friend Hedgehog, and it's still going. I'm working on the third book right now, but I was really excited for the format that we ended up going with this book because initially it was meant to be a picture book. And the more I was developing it and talking with my editor and thinking about myself as a young child, the more I realized the need for books that kind of hit that mark between picture books and novels, I would say. And there are a lot of chapter book series out there, but specifically books that carry a lot of their weight in illustrations, a longer format story, but something that has, you know, illustrations on every page. And for me as a young reader, with the struggle to read and just with the love of art and illustration, I really leaned on those pictures. And so I would say working more on those types of stories, those types of books, and hopefully extending the series, Our Friend Hedgehog, and maybe moving into, you know, some other series that are for that, you know, first to third grade reader that is like I was as a kid that really craved something along those lines. So I think, yeah, these days that's what I'm thinking about a lot.
I think that's so fantastic. So I'm a huge fan of picture books and obviously there can never be enough picture books, but it always does surprise me, you know, on the Children's Book Review, I get so many books submitted to me every day and they're really, it's that sort of early reader group and easy chapter book. There's tons of picture books that come in and tons of middle grade, but that spot is like, it's missing. So I love that you have a focus in there because that I feel like is the sweet spot of really hooking kids to read independently and want to read on their own, not just because they're being told to.
Right. Yeah. Keeping the interest in reading. And I think that was a struggle for me. And, you know, if I'm honest, there was a long period of time between like being a young reader reading picture books and then becoming like, you know, a young adult who started reading again. Like there was a long window of time where I wasn't that interested in reading. And it's funny to think about me now being an author and illustrator of kids lit. But like, yeah, like I think that was part of it, that I didn't have those kind of transitional books to kind of ease me into a more, you know, novel-like stories. So yeah, I think so. And I will say, I started working on the Hedgehog series in 2016, but I feel like a lot has changed even, you know, till now with that window of, you know, early chapter books. I think that there are more creators making books for that age range. And I'm excited to see that. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, because you know, once a kid can read an early reader, they do go through them quite fast. And so you want to have the next one ready to hand them. Like, here's another one, like feed them like cookies, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, some say that you need to be a reader first to be a writer. And what I love about you is that you do both writing and illustrating, incredible illustrations. So do you agree with that you should be a reader before becoming a writer?
Well, I will say it's certainly helpful because the more books you read, the more you understand, you know, more of the technical aspects of writing and creating a book, pacing, you know, depending on what format you're writing for, but like just the structure of books and how stories are created for the page. And I think, yeah, the more you read, the more you have to kind of reference as you're doing your own bit of writing. So I would say so. Yes. I know that, like, you know, when I set out to move from picture books to early chapter books, I went out and, you know, whether it was online, library, bookstores, like I looked for everything I could find in that age range to see what types of stories were out there, and not for my own ideas, but more to understand like the structure of writing for that age range. So, yeah, I would say that that's pretty important.
And then you kind of touched on this a little bit, that maybe you struggled a little bit as reading as a kid, and that you came to reading again more as a young adult. So was there a pivotal moment or multiple moments in which you considered yourself a reader?
I think the pivotal moment for me was discovering, this is very specific, but Sandra Cisneros. I'm going to butcher her last name. Cisneros?
I can't help you.
Oh, gosh. Well, her book, The House on Mango Street, it's a collection of stories in verse, and something about really, I got into poetry. This is, I would say, late high school. And I really connected with her style of writing and the way that she told stories through her poetry and how each poem connected to the next. And I just thought it was beautiful. Have you heard of the book, The House on Mango Street?
I have heard of it. I haven't
okay,
read
so
it.
Okay, so you know who I'm talking about. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Sandra. if you hear this, I should know it. I feel ashamed. Had to pronounce her last name. But yeah, she's a fabulous writer. And so that's, I can remember that memory of reading that specific book. And what's funny about her writing too is like actually one of the poems in that book became a picture book. So I find that interesting, like that connection, you know, poetry to picture books. And that's the type of picture books that I like to write, are very spare kind of poetic texts. And so I would say that was sort of my in to more, you know, adult reading material, if you will, or even like middle grade. I would go back to middle grade novels. And today that's one of my favorite genres to read is middle grade novels. So yeah, and I'm not sure if that answers your question, but like that moment sticks out in my mind as like when I became interested in reading again as a teenager.
Sometimes it just takes that one book that connects with your heart or connects with your mind. And then obviously you, as someone who became a creator of books, to notice the connectivity between each poem that she was writing. So I think that was a beautiful answer. What does a typical day look like when you're working on your books? And do you work on book creation every day or just when inspiration strikes?
Well, these days it's a little different because my family's preparing for a baby.
Yay!
So my days are not the norm at the moment, but I'll go back to, hey, like a year ago and share what my typical studio days look like. I have a home studio I live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I have a home studio in like a three floor kind of narrow row home right in the city. And so, yeah, I'm on the third floor of my studio. And my typical day would be working on my books daily. And that would not mean that I'm doing the same thing every day. So it depends on the stage in which I'm at, you know, with the book. So if I'm in the middle of writing a book, I may, you know, sit at my desk and do some research for a while on something very specific for what I'm going to be writing, or just brainstorm or look through sketchbooks. I may, in the writing stage, leave the house and go to coffee shops or bookstores. That's where I like to work outside of the house. Now, if I've moved on to, say, the sketching stage or thumbnailing or sketching stage for a book, I'm usually at my desk and I'm doing very rough scribbles, probably a couple hours at a time, plenty of breaks for snacks and walking my dog, like I mentioned before. Yeah, and that stage can usually go on for 2-3 weeks when I'm working on sketches for a picture book. And then if I'm working on final art, I'm often listening to podcasts like yours, or audiobooks are really big for me when I'm working on art, because I can do two things at once. You know, I can't listen to a podcast and be writing, unfortunately, because I do like the stage of writing. But for the art making, it's really fun because I can listen to other things or music while I'm making my art. And I'll usually work on final art for a picture book for about between 4 and 6 months, depending on the picture book. And I work five days a week. I try to be a little more structured these days. When I first started out in my career, I was working 7 days a week and I was working super late night shifts and things like that. And I don't do that anymore. So I try to take weekends off and unless I have like a tight deadline. But yeah, I try to remain as structured as I can be. I think it's helpful for me because then, you know, I can take a lunch break and then I can stop work before dinner and I can do other things that I want to do, including reading or just typical adult responsibilities like chores, you know? So yeah, I would say it really just depends, but I'll have big chunks of time where every day looks similar, you know, if that makes sense. So
absolutely. Well, since I absolutely love babies, I feel so excited for you. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
I had this burning question pop up where I was like, well, so you're preparing for the baby to arrive. Do you have already some books in the baby's room? And if so, what are those books? Are you not there yet?
Yeah, well, we just had our baby like brunch / shower. So we did get a number of books as gifts, but also because I'm a huge collector of picture books, we've got quite the collection going. Now I've been joking that I'm not sure how many of the books I'm actually going to share with the baby. Some of them I don't want to get messed up, you know, a lot of signed books from other author illustrators who are friends of mine. But some of them I had this thought, oh, some of my favorite picture books also come in board book. And because in the early years, board books are going to be, you know, the baby's jam. I added those to our registry. So I'll name it. So Leaves by David Ezra Stein is one of my favorite picture books. And so that's one of them. The Snowy Day, of course. Snow by Uri Shilovitz is another one of my favorites. It's funny, two snow books, but those just happen to be two of my favorite picture books. Oh my goodness. We have some classics, you know, Pat the Bunny. Yeah. Some Richard Scarry, gotta have the classics, Maurice Sendak books. Oh man, so many. And then like, of course I'm gonna, you know, how can I not share some of my favorite current picture books that I already have in my collection? I'm sure I'll be reading those to the baby too. So yeah, there's so many.
Absolutely. I know what the board book that was on repeat in our house, probably the most, was Goodnight Gorilla by Peggy Rathman.
Yes, I'm gonna write that down because I love that book and I have it in paperback form.
Yeah. And then as the kids got older, her 10 minutes till bedtime. And so I still now to this day, I've got an 18-year-old, a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old. And I'm still like 10 minutes till bedtime.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Good night, Gorilla. Good one.
Yeah, it's so fun. All right. So since you do write and illustrate your own books, but you also illustrate the books that are written by other people. So talk to me about how your process or your mindset might be different from when you're creating the words and the illustrations versus just the illustrations for someone else's words.
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually started my career as an illustrator for other authors' works. I always hoped that one day I would get to publish my own stories, but I studied illustration. I went to college for illustration, and that was my like formal like training, you know. So the writing side wasn't, and so that took a little bit longer. But so for illustrating other people's books, it always started by me receiving a manuscript by email. And then I would take that manuscript and I would start marking it down. Well, first I had to read it and decide if it was a good fit for me. And knowing it was a good fit for me meant by the time I finished reading the draft, there were images in my mind and I was like getting really excited about creating this book. So that was a surefire, you know, way of knowing that this was a project I wanted to take on. So that's the first thing. Then I take this manuscript and I break it down, you know, spread by spread, page by page, figuring out what text is going to be on each page. And I start to do thumbnailing, little squares. For those people who don't know, think of like storyboarding for all sorts of things, for comics, for movies. You do the same thing with picture books. They even do storyboarding for commercials. So like, you know, scene by scene, right? So laying those out and doing like the scribbliest of scribbles for these little, like often only I know what's happening in them, you know, just to kind of get the pacing of the story down. And then I'll take those and I'll start to refine those sketches so that they're presentable for my publisher, for my, you know, the editor and art director who are working on the book. And then maybe there's some back and forth where we've changed a couple things, you know, revise a couple of scenes, change perspective, like visual perspective and things like that. And then I get the green light to go into final art. And so that was the way I illustrated a number of books before I wrote my first one that became published. And that was Melvin and the Boy in 2011, I believe. So yeah, so for many, many picture books, I was solely the illustrator. And then when I, with Melvin and the Boy, it was funny because what I ended up doing, and I didn't know how my process would change, but I sat, my ideas come to me, I was talking about this recently, my ideas will come to me like all at once almost. It's like I have all of these bits and pieces of a story that are floating around in my brain for many, many years. And then I'll wake up one morning and I'll just be like, oh my gosh, I have this story. And I'll sit down and I'll write it. And like this, you know, it's such a gift when it happens. It doesn't happen very often, I have to say. But like, it's almost like my brain's doing this background work of creating this story. And then it just kind of pours out of me. And like, that's kind of been my experience for the picture books that I've made to date. And so that kind of happened with Melvin. And then, you know, once I sold the manuscript, No, I didn't sell the manuscript first. First, I shared it. I'm sorry. I have to think back because it was 2011 when I shared the manuscript with my agent. Because I had an agent for the first time around the time that I started writing. So when I shared it with him, he told me, okay, why don't you put together a picture book dummy, you know, sketches, and I'll send this off to some editors. And so I had never done this before, you know, to pitch a project as an author and an illustrator. But basically, all I ended up doing was exactly the same methods that I had done as an illustrator. I kind of separated myself as author Lauren and illustrator Lauren. And so I gave myself the manuscript, which is already pretty like tightly formed, you know, and then I sat down, I did the same thing. I broke down the text, I started storyboarding, and then I refined those sketches. And so that's kind of my process, regardless of whether I write it or somebody else writes the story. It's consistently kind of keeping myself separate from my illustrator self, separate from the writing self, because I know that later on, as you're making a picture book, sometimes your text may be a little bit on the wordy side. And once you come up with all of your sketches, you realize that you can pare down your text quite a bit. And so I don't go back to that until a whole dummy has been sketched out. And then I start to work on the text again. So then there's a little bit of back and forth, but I would say for the most part, I try to really nail down that manuscript before I get into the drawing side of things.
Because I can imagine as you're illustrating and your illustration shows something that you no longer need the text for, when it's your manuscript, it's easy for you to get the eraser out or delete on your computer. But how does that work when you're illustrating for somebody else? You've already been provided with this type supposedly manuscript. Like, do you ever say, I don't think we need these words anymore? Or do you just create the art that comes to you and leave that up to the editor?
I mostly leave it up to the editor. There's been oftentimes I'll think to myself, oh, like, there's probably, you know, there's a couple lines here, like some words here that can probably be pared down. And before I would even say anything, the author and the editor who have looked at my dummy have already worked on editing the dummy. Or the text, if that makes sense. So, I think, I think there's been a couple times where I've made a suggestion, but often like everybody's on board with like, oh yeah, we see this, like, you know, this is something we can, you know, pare down a little bit. It's cool. It's such a collaborative experience working on a picture book or working on a book in general. So many different people in the mix, even copy, you don't think about copy editors, even art copy editing, like it's such a unique part of the process. So I think it's a really cool job to be a part of.
Yeah. And I often feel like the art directors don't get enough shout out too, because we often see the illustrations and the final cover and everything from the outsider. If you're not in the industry, as the illustrator has done this beautiful artwork, and you assume that the illustrator did all the layouts and everything. But no, I mean, there's so many team members going into the layout and making sure that the art lines up with the page folds. And, you know, it's like there's so much that goes into it.
A lot. There's a lot that goes into it. Yeah. And I do think that so many people don't get the credit that they should, you know, even if on the copyright page, for example. Yeah. Cause it's hard. One thing I will say that I always find so strange is that they often on the copyright page, they don't put the editor's name. And I think, you know, the editors often have such a, you know, big role in the creation of this story. And yeah, it's unfortunate sometimes that, you know, it's hard to you have to do your research to look it up, like who edited this specific book, you know, but like to credit all the people that I work with. So I think book without them, you know.
Exactly. And in a novel, the author has that whole section for acknowledgements where they, you know, can almost write like a whole love letter to everybody that, but picture books and early reader books and chapter books, maybe some chapter books offer that, but.
Yeah.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Well, Just Like Millie is your latest picture book, and you've written the words and you've made the illustrations. So can you share the what or the who that inspired you to write Just Like Millie and explore the theme of shyness and anxiety in children?
Yes. Well, there were a few different moments that, like I said before, with my ideas, you know, there are all these little bits and pieces that kind of come together to form a story. And so one of the experiences I had was hanging out with one of my good friends and her son, a very shy, kind of introverted little boy. You know, he was quiet. I was trying to engage in conversation with him and he wasn't really interested, or I could tell he was just really bashful. And then his dog came into the room. And I immediately saw his face transform and, like, you know, he started basically beaming and he went into, you know, he just started opening up and talking about his dog, talking about some of his favorite things. And, like, it was just a really sweet moment. And it got me thinking more about, the power that animals, you know, dogs and animals have to like brighten people's spirits and like kind of make them feel more comfortable in their surroundings. I also thought about myself. We had two senior dogs, like they passed away during COVID. We moved into this neighborhood and, you know, I didn't really interact too much with the neighbors, but the more I was out with my dogs walking them, the more conversations I started to have with other people in the area and the neighborhood and, you know, made friends that way. And if it wasn't for my dogs, like, you know, leading me to these conversations, I may not have as much of a connection with some of my neighbors. And so just thinking about, yeah, the ways in which animals can do that for us. And also thinking about my own, like, you know, I was kind of a shy, introverted child myself, and I'm still quite an introvert, you know, especially with this type of career. Like, you know, we sit alone and draw and write by ourselves so much of the day, right? I can totally relate to the little girl in the story of just like Millie and her having a hard time wanting to make connections in her new neighborhood, in her new city. So yeah, just thinking about different personal experiences and kind of the pieces all coming together to form this story.
I was thinking when you said how when you walk out in your neighborhood with your dog, or you used to have two other dogs as well, and how you connect and you start chatting with people. They say that the easiest way to meet new people is with dogs and also with babies. So then I'm thinking of you and I'm like, oh, well, you're going to be out walking your dog. You're going to have your baby in your like baby Beyond or your baby sling or whatever carrier. And I mean, all the people that you'll probably meet with your both a dog and a baby.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. I'm sure I'll make a lot more new friends that way. Absolutely.
All right. So the protagonist of your book is a shy young girl who finds mm-hmm. solace in her new friend, which is her rescue dog, Millie. So shyness and anxiety can be delicate themes to explore in children's literature. So tell us more about her character and the growth that she has, the girl, throughout the story.
Sure. So in the beginning, she's just moved to this new city. And quick shout out to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is where I live. I put the location of the book as Harrisburg. So it was fun to draw little Easter eggs, favorite landmarks into the story. So she moves to Harrisburg with her mom, and she is having a real hard time adjusting. Now, she doesn't quite admit to that, but her mom is trying in various ways to introduce her to other kids and families in the neighborhood by like at a bookstore reading, you know, a neighborhood or a neighbor's like get together, things like this. And she says, no, you know, she's just fine on her own. And her mom, you know, it ends up elevating to the point of her breaking down into tears, the little girl. The mom sees how hard it's been for her. And one day she wakes up and the mom's arranged a little surprise outing, and they go on a walk and end up at a dog rescue. And she introduces, or the woman at the shelter introduces her to a dog named Millie. And she's a little shy at first, but they both seem to like one another. And her mom asks if she would like to take Millie home, and she is, you know, quietly excited about this. And from the moment they leave the shelter, she notices Millie's demeanor, and she notices how Millie, the dog, is interacting with passersby and how quickly Millie is able to make friends. And so it's through the dog's eyes, I think, that she's able to kind of learn how to be brave and kind of step out of her comfort zone and make a friend. And so, spoiler alert, by the end of the story, she may learn these tricks and make her first friend in the neighborhood. So that's kind of, yeah, the gist of her journey.
So Millie is a rescue dog, and she clearly, as you just said, plays a really significant role in helping the young girl overcome her fears. So what do you want everyone to know about your thoughts toward the significance of companionship, whether with animals or humans, in navigating challenging emotions? So what are your feelings about the significance of companionship? Because I feel as though that's, you know, a big part of this, and how by having somebody by our side, whether it's an animal or a human, it can sort of help us overcome whatever our individual challenges are.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think I guess in this case, Millie's just what she needs to have that kind of support system and that love. Of course, she has her mom, but, you know, this dog's personality and her energy and enthusiasm are just kind of rubbing off on this little girl in a way that she wants to make a friend like Millie does. You know, she and it, you know, it all comes down to an interaction at a dog park. And, you know, she's been watching Millie make friends for maybe several days or weeks here. And she just has like enough courage in that moment when she sees another little girl and her dog coming into the park. She just has enough courage to take that first step and say hello to that other little girl. Yeah. And, you know, I think having a companion, you know, if it's a sibling, if it's a pet, you know, whatever it is, like that companion to, you know, to lean on and to kind of channel their energies and their excitement about things is helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be so easy to just get stuck in your own head and your own way of thinking. And sometimes somebody or something else can come into our lives and just give us a new lens to look through and see things in a new way. And Millie definitely is that for the little girl.
That's right.
Well, your illustrations are known for their warmth and expressiveness. So I always love the rosy cheeks that you give your human characters. I feel like you and Sophie Blackall, like the rosy cheeks that both of you do are just, I don't know, I just love it so much. So for this book, I know you used ink, watercolor, and soft pastels. So do you say pastels or pastels?
I say pastels, but
pastels. Yeah.
Sure, you could pronounce it either way.
Yeah. Okay. So watercolor and soft pastels. Is that your preferred combination?
That, you know, it's always a little different depending on the book. It's becoming, at the moment, it's my preferred combination. I have just discovered in the last couple projects the wonder of soft pastels, and I'm pretty excited about them. I hadn't really used soft pastels before. Something about being an illustrator, like I get antsy using the exact same materials for every project. I really like to switch it up and try new things. And I know often people don't probably notice, most people don't notice it, only me, you know, because the end result ends up looking like my work and looking similar to the late, you know, to the previous projects. But I do always try to find some sort of new art material to bring in to, you know, the next project. And it usually, like, I pick it, you know, I don't pick at random. I pick it what would suit the tone of this story, you know. And for Millie, yeah, using those soft pastels and just that extra kind of, they have quite a vibrancy to them, and that softness, because it's kind of paired with the harder lines in my work, those like bolder, thick lines. And so to bring and pair the soft pastels on top, I thought was a nice combination. So it was just a lot of fun to work that way.
I always love your artwork, no matter how you do it. So, and I have no art majors, but I know what I like when I look at it, and I love looking at your artwork. So
thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. I mentioned just a second ago the rosy cheeks, but what goes into visually capturing the emotions of the characters for you?
You know, I think that's the most important part for me, is to make sure that I really nail the emotions of my characters. And I guess the way that I achieve that is whether it's using, well, I try to channel that character, right? And I look at I'm big on reference, whether that's, you know, looking through magazines, looking online, looking at myself in a mirror. I'm big on really doing research, whether it's, you know, for the writing aspect or the illustration aspect of the project, and just really kind of studying like those expressions and emotions, and then kind of just drawing and redrawing, and like the smallest tweaks of a mouth or an eye or an eyebrow or something like that really can change the expression and the emotion pretty drastically. And it's kind of crazy because, like, I don't consider myself a photorealistic illustrator, right? I'm not like painting realistic portraits of people. I'm using very simple lines, but I'm trying to get that bigger emotion. So yeah, those the smallest little tweaks of the line, or even like you said, the rosy cheeks, like when the little girl becomes increasingly flustered and upset and eventually like has a breakdown, like, you know, her face is getting like rosier, you know? And so I try to like just pay attention to those little details when I'm making my art to kind of drive home that emotion.
Well, the setting, you said this just before, is your little city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So how fun was it for you to use your town as the backdrop? And when you were saying it before, I was thinking to myself, how cool would it be if there ends up being, you know, like one of those bronze book sculptures in Harrisburg of the little girl walking Millie, you know, outside the library or something. It'd be so fun.
That would be amazing. Super amazing. Now I want to like propose that to my mayor.
Yeah, you should.
Hilarious. So Harrisburg, I still feel is a fairly new city to me. I moved here in 2016 after living in New York City before. And then before that, Baltimore. So I've been in various places, but Harrisburg was like, I get really excited when I go to new locations, whether that's on vacation, you know, travels or work travels or whatnot. And I am really inspired by like the architecture of a city and just kind of the overall vibe of a city. And so I'm really big on location drawing. And I wanted to pull that into this book, just like Millie and more specifically Harrisburg, because I hadn't drawn my city into a book before. And I was like, this is the book. This is the book for that, you know, Harrisburg is going to be highlighted. And so it was really neat because I could go around town and draw some of my favorite locations and then bring it back to the studio and, you know, to the desk and sit down and try to figure out how to work them into various scenes. And so things like my bookstore, the Midtown Scholar, shout out. they are an amazing independent bookstore up the street from me. And I used their location as one of the settings where there's a reading, an author doing a reading. And I put a little area from the interior in the illustrations. And I also drew one of my friends there who is the events coordinator, Alex. I drew him into the story. He hasn't even seen it yet. I'm excited because I have various like friends, either their small business is in it or like the person themselves or their dog. So I'm excited to like package up books and mail them to each person with like, you know, find yourself in my book kind of thing. So yeah, it's just been really fun to do that. The last time I feel like I did that, I guess, was with Nana in the City, which took place in New York, and I was living there at the time. And so that was more universally known locations like Times Square, for example, you know. And for this one, not as many people will recognize the locations, but it's fun that it's kind of like only the people that live in the central Pennsylvania area are gonna like know that, you know, this is where Millie takes place. So it's kind of like a fun little secret, you know.
Well, another fun little secret that you actually, it's not so secret because you called it out in the book, but you did the dedication in memory of your two previous dogs. And then yes. On the jacket flap in your bio, it says you modeled Millie and one of her new dog friends after your two dogs. So how special was it for you to be able to put them in the story?
Oh, it was really special. And it was very cathartic because both of my dogs had recently passed away. And I started working on the art for the book right after that. And so I was like having to look at reference of their photos and like crying and drawing. And like, I feel like I really like it helped me grieve to work on this book right after their passings for that reason. And now like all I do is smile when I look at it because I'm like, there's our dogs, you know, like there's Peanut and there's Keiko. And it's fun because I made them be the last dog friend that Millie meets in the book is our other little dog, Keiko, who passed away last. And fun to kind of have them reunite there on the page. And now we have it in the book. So yeah, it's special that I was able to do that. So
I was talking with Kate DiCamillo on the show, and we were talking about how much we enjoy reading dedications and, you know, in novels, the acknowledgments. And I loved the way she said it. She said she loves to read it because then she knows whose hearts she's holding in her hands. And so when she said that, and then when I read your dedication, and then I read your little mini bio on the jacket flap. So I had read the dedication, I read the story from start to finish, and then I ended with that jacket flap. And just reading that made the book feel even more special to me, because obviously it's a Lauren Castillo book. So I know I'm holding your heart, but how much of your heart I didn't realize I was holding until I read those. And so I just want everybody to make sure they always read the dedications and the acknowledgments.
I also love to read the dedications and the acknowledgments. Yes. Yeah, I agree. I love, what was the line that Kate said?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't remember verbatim, but it was along the lines of, she likes to read it because then she knows whose hearts she's holding in her hands. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Leave it to Kate to come up with the perfect wording.
Yeah, I know, right? So Just Like Millie has the potential to resonate deeply with young readers who may struggle with some shyness, like we talked about. When a reader gets to the end, they've read it from beginning to end. How do you hope this book has connected with the reader?
Whether, you know, you're somebody who your family's just rescued a dog, or whether, you know, you're just a dog lover, or you're, you know, that socially anxious child or adult. I think those are all different ways that I'm like hoping people will connect with the story and find their own kind of courage or inspiration, or just simply smile at this little girl's journey and the way that she was able to evolve in the company of this new friend, Millie, and then her new human friend that she makes at the end of the story. So yeah, I'm hopeful that, you know, even if a couple or one child takes something from this book, it will have been worth it. So I'm really excited to get this book into little readers' hands and see what kind of responses I get from it.
Right from the front cover with that beautiful bronze embossed title on the jacket cover to the end. It is so warm. It is so inviting. And I think my favorite moment in the book is the final end paper. And I'm not going to say what's in the final end paper because I want people to read it and experience it for themselves. But it is just such a lovely, warm, inviting story. So well done.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. And those end papers were a lot of fun to make. The front and back end papers, I won't ruin it for anyone. But it was fun doing a same but different type imagery in front versus back. So yeah, if you get the book, definitely take a look at the end papers and check out the little details in there.
I want to add one more question in here quickly, just in case anybody missed it. A gorgeous companion to your Caldecott Honor winning Nana in the City released earlier this year, and it's Nana in the Country. So do you want to just share a little bit about it and what it meant to you to get to do this follow-up book?
Sure. Yeah. Nana in the Country just came out in February of this year of 2024. Nana in the City came out in 2014. So it was a whole 10 years later that this companion book came out. And I initially didn't know that I would be doing a companion book. It was something that, again, was kind of floating around in my brain, I guess, for a little while. And then I just had this aha moment, like, I want to do a book where Nana visits her grandson who lives in the country, you know, a city mouse, country mouse type vibe, right? So the book Nana in the City and this book Nana in the Country is based off my own childhood experiences. Specifically, the city book was an experience that I had with my own Nana. So the Nana in both stories is my childhood Nana, and Nana lived in the city and I visited Nana in the city almost every summer and had my own experiences with her. And that's where I learned to love the city. And so I really was just thinking about, especially now that I live in central Pennsylvania and I'm surrounded by farmlands and Lancaster County is right here, home of a lot of Amish folks and just beautiful rolling hills. And I just kept thinking, I think that was probably one of the sparks for Nana in the Country was just my moving to this area and thinking about the landscape. And then, oh yes, like, you know, the boy from Nana in the City lives in the country. And so Nana needs to go visit him in this next story. So this book just meant a lot to me because I could revisit these characters and Nana especially. And my own Nana passed away a couple of years ago and I was really close with her. And so just being able to revisit again, like I was sharing how cathartic it was to work on Just Like Millie after my dogs had passed away. It was kind of a similar experience with Nana in the Country, actually. And so to get to revisit my Nana's personality and just kind of who she would be in this instance of visiting her grandchild in the country was just so fun. And I actually took a trip to an Airbnb farmette in Lancaster, and I stayed there for a few days, and I did a lot of research and lots of drawing and writing, and that's kind of where the story started. So I'm really excited for especially readers who have read Nana in the City to follow up with this book, Nana in the Country. I think hopefully you'll enjoy revisiting time with those characters again. So thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome. I mean, I just think whenever any kind of artist, whether it's a word artist or an illustrator artist, like whatever kind of art somebody creates, when they share their heart in that art, then it's impossible for it not to resonate with people. And so I think that's what's magical about what you do, Lauren, is that you do put your heart in it. And we as the reader, we really feel that. So thank you for creating the work that you do. And thank you for being you. And thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, you're going to make me cry. I'm feeling like extra weepy today for some reason.
That's me every day.
That's funny. Oh, well, thanks for having me and for saying that. And yeah, I hope that readers will enjoy the latest, just like Millie, and shoot me a message on social media if you liked it, or even if you didn't, let me know what you liked, and I'd love to chat about it. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us on this quest for growing readers. To learn more about Lauren Castillo, visit her at laurencastillo.com. Don't forget to check out our show notes for that link and to order copies of Just Like Millie and Nana in the Country. And remember, if you love listening to the Growing Readers podcast, you can hear it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you enjoy listening. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform to get new episodes as soon as they launch. And while you're at it, grab your phone and text a friend you know who would love to listen to this episode. The Growing Readers Podcast is a production of the Children's Book Review. For more inspiring reads like Lauren Castillo's Just Like Millie, visit us at thechildrensbookreview.com.